Alright, everybody, welcome back. Bio Bros, episode 4 on all streaming platforms. We're coming back with another most misunderstood pet. This time, it's the betta fish. We're doing back-to-back on these ones, because I like the last one. Next episode's going to be a little different. We aren't just going to run through this series. It's going to be a series that we do forever. So, I'm going to start with a little bit of history on the fish, because I think it's pretty interesting. They are one of the first domesticated fish, actually, about 1,000 years ago. And this bit I actually find interesting, because I was, for a long time, I just go back and forth on how I pronounce the name of these fish based on what the other people around me were saying, so I didn't know what was right and wrong. And I just learned this one, that in English, most people pronounce it betta. But the name is believed to be derived from the Malay word ikan betta, with ikan meaning fish, and betta referring to an ancient warrior tribe. So basically, fighting fish, which we call them, right? And then another interesting one on that is placat. Normally we think of placat as a short fin betta, right? We'll say that's a placat betta. And that's actually a Thai word that literally means fighting fish. So, again, just fighting fish. So it's kind of like saying ATM machine, saying placat betta, but since in common usage it is a word to describe the fin type, it's fine to keep saying. But this article that we're going through today is, well, because remember guys, how the series works is we Google the species of the animal, and then care, and we click on the first care guide, and we go through and review it. We kind of make our own in the end. This one comes from a large corporation that makes aquarium products. So this one's a little interesting, but it's pretty cool. So, Alex, you want to take us through the first kind of section?
Yeah, so they're set up a little bit differently. Instead of just like straight up and down lists, they have almost like an article style. So to start off, they go, there's a part that just says fighting fish, and it's sometimes called Siamese fighting fish. They're from the family I'm going to murder this. Ossiphoronimidae. I think, which includes number of grommy species. They're also a species that has, I can't remember exactly what the organ is. I think it's almost like a lung, but they can gulp air at the surface instead of having to get oxygen just from their gills.
The labyrinth organ.
Labyrinth organ. That's what it is. Yep. And so it's talks about how it makes it possible for them to live in smaller aquariums with less circulation. And it says their average lifespan is 3 to 4 years. That's going to be like the first thing I would say is I believe is slightly off, because I know of people who have kept them for much longer. I've kept, I think, at least one for longer than that. I don't know, Shaw, if you've kept any longer than that.
I think 4 years is my record. But here's what I'll be devil's advocate a little bit on the average lifespan. Most of these are very, very inbred, so they're not going to live as long as like a healthy betta would, or like a wild type one, because their genetics are not ideal. They're predisposed to things like cancers. I've seen multiple bettas with large tumors on them. And usually most people buy them as adults, so they're already kind of along in their lifespan. So I will say, generally, yeah, that is fairly accurate, but that's not their actual lifespan. That's about how long you can expect to get out of one you bought out of a cup. So
I agree with that, too, to be honest. Yeah.
There's one other thing that I disagree with in this one. You didn't read it directly, but it doesn't matter. We're not trying to plagiarize these guys anyway. They say that they can live in roadside ditches. Okay, now, that is true, but the roadside ditches in Southeast Asia are a lot different than the roadside ditches in America. In America, our roadside ditches are temporary puddles of, like, mud, rainwater. Especially where I live. Like, that's a roadside ditch, is just a temporary puddle. Over there, a roadside ditch is a full-on little stream that's permanent and full of clean water and plants. That's a little misleading. While true, it is a little misleading. They don't live in, like, little puddles. Don't think of it like that. Like, they live in, you know, places where all other fish live. If you think about, you know, where you've seen fish, yeah, they live there.
Yeah, I would also agree with that. It is a very different type of puddle in the countries that they are from versus, like, the U.S. or even, like, Europe and things like that.
Yeah, so you know, directly wrong saying roadside ditch is, like, yeah, you can totally find bettas on the side of the road, but it's a whole, it's slightly misleading.
Yes, because there's missing information, essentially. So, like, the next thing they get into is the bettas' natural habitat. So they're native to Thailand, Cambodia, I think it's Laos? Is that how you say that?
Laos.
Laos. Sorry, I'm terrible with words in general. Vietnam, Malaysia, and Indonesia. So they're often in, like, shaded areas, so they're not in direct sunlight or, like, the super high light areas and things like that. They like to hide in vegetation and stuff. And there's also, so the main species of betta, or however you want to say it, that, like, we are talking about today is betta splendens. That is the main, like, number one species in the hobby. They're the ones that you see in every commercial show, or, like, commercial store, and all the pet shops and things like that, is betta splendens. There's actually 70 recognized species of betta. Which a lot of people don't realize that. And some of them are very different from betta splendids. Like, some you can keep communally and things like that, but, and they, some get much larger than betta splendids. But they don't, they're not in the hobby as much. They're much more rare in the hobby.
Yeah, those are going to definitely be more like specialty, not specialty, but you're an advanced keeper by the time you're looking into wild type bettas.
Yes, and those are definitely not for the everyday person, because the wild types tend to not have the same, like, color as betta splendids. Betta splendids tend to be much more colorful, and come in much more of a variety of color.
I mean, there's a reason splendens is as popular as it is. It's a insanely tough fish, and they've been breeding the things for 1,000 years, so they have every color you can come up with. Like, my personal favorite, betta chanoides, is a little bit of Latin on that one. Chana is a genus that is all the snakeheads. Heavily invasive in some parts of America. Then oides means like, so they're very similar to snakeheads in how they behave and look. Really, really cool. Look completely different than splendens. Their care is very different. And it's really cool. Give them a Google. They're super cool. And another crazy thing, too, I didn't see them. I did not see them in the store. I saw the tag that the PetSmart near me had betta embellus in. I don't know if they were true embellus or if they were hybrids or what, but they said they had embellus. So who knows? Maybe one day I'll see it. But yeah. All right, I'll take us into the next one. This one is water requirements. So they prefer calm water, pH between 6.8 and 7.5. It says they can seem to tolerate cooler temperatures. Makes them more susceptible to disease. 100% agree with that. Yeah, that's definitely true. But they're saying the optimal temperature is between 76 and 85. In the pre-show, we talked about, we go through these articles a little bit in the pre-show, so we know what to expect. We still do, it is true, this is the very first one, but we were saying that 85 seems a little hot. As you increase temperature in cold-blooded animals, their metabolism increases. So they can survive at 85, but it's really going to cut their life short. And 76, I think, can be a little warm, too. I think you can go a little lower, but that is overall pretty fine. I'd say maybe 72 to 80 is about where I would personally keep them, but that 76 to 85 isn't all that bad. I can definitely see people who would argue for that, and I could see myself being persuaded into that being real. Next bit here that I actually like, I enjoy this a lot, is if the aquarium is in a room that is below 76 degrees, you can use a their brand heater. But I like that they mentioned that, because if your room is appropriate temperature, the water in there is going to be the appropriate temperature as well. You actually don't need a heater in warm rooms. Is it potentially better to play it safe? I don't know. You can decide that one. I'll say I have no heaters in any of my aquariums, and I haven't for quite a while, and it's been just fine for me because I live where it's very hot, and my tanks have been just fine. So that's a cool one, too. Lots of people with reptile rooms, not reptile rooms, fish rooms, choose to heat the room rather than heat individual tanks. So I think that is cool. I threw that in there because people, you hear people harping on, oh, bettas need a filter and a heater in all their tanks. And it's like, well, they don't necessarily need a heater. Not necessarily if you do it, if you live in the desert.
Yeah, I also agree with that. Like, they don't necessarily need a heater if your room is warm enough. If you're not in that temperature range, keeping the water in a temperature range, it's definitely, you need to put a heater in there. Because they are still tropical fish.
Yeah, I mean, we read off where they were from, like Thailand, Cambodia, all that. That's not known for being too cold.
No, not at all.
All right. I'll do this next one, too, just because we're going to talk about this one for a while, I bet. Mm-hmm. So it says that bettas are not very active. Right off the bat, a huge thing limiting their mobility is those huge fins. In the wild, they do not have those huge fins. Those are man-made. Through the process of selective breeding, they have those huge fins, and they really slow them down. So while it is true they want to be active, and the short-finned versions definitely are, and some of the long-finned ones are too. Says, larger habitats are more stable and easier to maintain. 100% agree on that one. Bigger is always better in aquariums for every possible reason you can think of. They're better. And then it goes into promoting three of their products they sell, which are made kind of for betta fish. And without going into two specifics in here, we pulled a couple of these up in the pre-show too. They're all small tanks. They're 2.5 gallons and smaller. And we don't really agree with that one here. Can it be done? Yes, it can. Is that what you should be looking for? Should you be looking for the absolute bare minimum trying to scrape by where you put any decoration in the tank and it takes up a ton of room from this animal? No. 5 gallons or bigger is what you want.
Yeah, I 100% would agree with that, because the 5 gallons gives them the opportunity to swim around in open water and stuff if they would like to. It also gives you the opportunity to put decorations and things like that. It's also a lot easier to find filters and stuff for a 5 gallon versus a 2.5, because, again, with bettas, you don't want to have a high flow filter, because they will just get blown around and they'll end up dying from stress. They want a very slow flow filter to even almost minimum flow, as long as there's still water exchange and stuff. But they are not a high flow species. They cannot survive in something like that. So, like, the minimum size for most filters is 5 gallons. So if you put a 5 gallon filter on a 2.5, it's going to be high flow. And you can't really do that. As well, is it tends to be a lot harder to find things like lids and lights that would work on a 2.5 gallon. They're either way too big or just like way too way too big, to be honest. Because like I said, most filters, even if you put it on 2.5, the entire side of one of your tanks is getting taken up by that filter.
Yeah,
essentially.
Or even like a sponge filter, you know, something that's ultra low flow. Awesome. A sponge filter in a 2.5 gallon, now your tank is actually a 2 gallon. You took out half a gallon of space. At 5 gallon tank, just way better. Just get the 5. And the price difference in those, we looked that up in the pre-show too. It's like $2. Just get the bigger tank. It's better in every single way. Alright, so next one is, while betas do not necessarily need a filter, having one provides them with optimum water quality. Again, slightly controversial take. I do agree. You don't need a filter if you meet all of these other requirements. You're going to need a much larger tank. You're going to need tons of plants. And you're going to need to be on top of everything. You're going to need to make sure that you're testing your water, that you're getting all these water changes done and all that. Then you don't need a filter. There's a cool method of keeping fish called the Wallstad method, where it is no tech, no lights, no filters, nothing. It's a full-on ecosystem. And they do work, and they are real. But in a 5-gallon tank, you better have a filter. They're going to need it. It's going to make your life so much easier. Just get a filter. Sponge filters, awesome. Hang on the back filters, even. Lots of good ones of those. And those are ultra easy to care for and maintain. They have some like baby canister filters too, or little internal motor-driven filters. All that stuff's good. Really, if you go get a 5-gallon filter from like PetSmart, it'll do you right. They're not that bad.
Yeah, I actually would prefer I prefer personally the hang on the backs, because a lot of them have an adjustable flow as well, so you can get it to where you get lower flow. And on top of that, it gives you a spot that instead of just having plants and stuff inside of the tank, you can put little cuttings of things in your filter. Obviously, you have to put on the one side so that the roots don't grow down and get into the little propeller. But you can grow plants, which will also, their roots will filter out nitrogen and things like that in those little hang on the backs. And then you're not taking room in the tank to do things like pothos or something like that.
Yes, definitely agree on that one too. And just a little side point here, this is my opinion, take it if you want it, is the smaller tanks, filter quality doesn't really matter. You can walk into any big box store and just pick out a filter and it'll be fine for your little tanks. It's when you get into big tanks that quality really does matter. You buy a cheapo canister filter for your 75, you're going to wake up and there's just going to be water everywhere. But you buy a little hang on the back, it's usually good. I've had very good luck with that. So I wouldn't overthink your filter too much. Just make sure it's not absolutely destroying the tank and turn it into like a river. All right. Next little bit on here is decorate the tank with gravel, plants, other items, including some floating cover to make them feel at home. I definitely agree on that one. Mm-hmm. Especially with the new study that came out using zebra danios, but I'm like 100% sure, I would bet a lot of money that this is true to pretty much every species of fish in the world. They did a study showing monitoring stress levels of danios in different environments. So one of them was a complete bare bottom tank, not anything in it. The other one was full of plants and gravel. And they were like, whoa, the more natural tank, the plants, the fish had less stress. So they took it a step further and allowed the fish to choose. They could stay on this side with just gravel on the bottom, or this side of the tank that's bare bottom. They all chose to be over top of the gravel. And these are mid-water swimmers. They'll swim throughout the whole tank. And then they were like, that's weird. So they did another one. And this time they just put a picture of gravel on the bottom of the tank. And they still chose to be even over the picture of gravel. So these bare bottom tanks that are very popular in monster fish keeping and pretty much everywhere in Asia, very popular, are kind of proving to stress out fish just by not having anything in them. So I like that they even decorated a little bit. That totally will make your animal feel more secure, and you'll get more than that. Well, you get on the longer end of life expectancy out of them just by doing that. And it looks nicer in your home.
Yeah, I also, I love that they put having floating cover, because like we said, or like they said earlier in their thing, betta fish live in like shallow pools and streams and stuff, excuse me, that are underneath trees, underneath bushes, or in like rice fields and stuff like that, or not rice fields, but like ponds and stuff that have tons of riparian growing plants, or they're above the water and like covering them. They like that lower light, nice covered underneath vegetation and things like that, because that's how they are in nature. So I mean, that will also help your fish feel less stressed and things like that.
Yeah, big fan. And says there are jumpers to grab a lid. Yeah, I agree with that. Some of the long-tailed ones aren't as good at it, but they will. And then next one, using this company's branded gravel cleaner, do about a third of a water change, 30% water change every 3 to 4 days in small unfiltered containers, which don't do that. You don't put a filter on a larger tank. And then, so this one, in filtered aquariums, 10% a week or 25% every 2 weeks, and then change the filter cartridge at least once a month. I don't know. My opinion on water changes, personally, is do them when you need them. And there's all sorts of reasons why you could need them, even all the way down to not even water quality, but TDS replacement. Like, eventually the solids that are in there are going to need to be replenished. So there's all sorts of reasons to do them, other than just like nitrogenous material buildup. So I don't say necessarily every week or every 2 weeks, but that is good. If you do 10% a week, your water will be clean. It's just
yeah,
how it goes. You don't have to worry about it. And then this last little bit is use water conditioner if you're using tap water. Again, one that's not necessarily true. If you have chlorine in your water, you need water conditioner. If you don't, if you're on like a whole house filtration system, or you get well water, or just your city doesn't have chlorine in the water, you don't necessarily need to condition it. You might, if your water's ultra soft and you're keeping like African cichlids, which we're not talking about today, maybe add something in to remineralize it. But at the end of the day, especially keeping a betta fish, these things are bulletproof. Your tap water will be fine as long as there's no chlorine in it.
Yeah.
All right. Alex, you want to do the next 2 bits? Unless you had anything else to add on?
Yeah. No, I think we nailed most of it, but I'll do the next 2 bits. So the first one, they're talking about their behavior and compatibility for betta fish. So they go on to say that males are very territorial and towards each other, and they must be kept separately in partition containers. I do completely agree about that. You do never keep two male bettas in the same enclosure or same tank. They will fight to the death. One of them will end up dying, because they will fight until one or both die. It says they can be kept with another fish in a community aquarium of 15 gallons or larger. I think you could get away with a 10-gallon with some smaller fish. And also, I think it comes down to the betta's personality itself. Because, like, I've had some bettas that never have any problem with any other fish. They're great, cool, never have a problem, nothing. And then I've had some bettas who are like, nope, everything needs to die. It doesn't matter if it's another betta. It doesn't matter if it's anything. It needs to die. So I think it more comes down to the personality of the betta. And you just need to focus on that and build around your enclosure or your tank around that. And then kind of just goes into saying that suitable tank mates could be things like tetras, calm barbs, resboas, live bears, corridors, and other non-aggressive fish, which I do also agree. because you don't want things that are going to nip at your betta's fins and things like that, because they just, if they nip, their fins will disappear and they will end up passing. If they're just constantly losing their fins, they'll be constantly stressed, they'll barely be able to swim around. It's just not a good time. I would say the one thing I would change is that if it's a fish that looks similar to a betta, like as in long flowing fins or collars and things like that, so like male guppies or female guppies and stuff, sometimes, again, I've had some be okay with it, but other times they just look too similar to a betta and they just do not like it. And then other species.
Yeah, individual personality definitely matters a lot on if you're going to be able to keep them with other fish or not. Really, I say species only tank is probably the best bet, even though they do look kind of cool in community tanks if you can get away with it. Especially if you're
only
a beginner, don't. Yeah, probably just go species only for the first little bit.
Yeah, species only tends to be a lot better for them. You'll get more personality out of your betta and things like that then, because then they're not competing with all these other fish and stuff for food. Because, again, betta, like the short fin bettas like Shaw and I normally keep, they can swim fairly well and stuff. But they still don't tend to be super fast fish, at least in my experience. So if you have them in there with, like, zebra danios and stuff, sometimes you'll drop in some food and the danios have eaten everything before the betta could even get to it. And so I really do think bettas in a species-only tank, having that time that they can come over with their, at their leisure and get the food and stuff like that, is better. It just, again, depends on the finnage you're having, depends on the personality of the betta, I think all those factors. So the next section they have is what a betta fish eat, which they go on to say that betta fish eat insects and other invertebrates in the wild, which is true, and they do best on a varied diet. I 100% agree with that. I agree with that for any species of animal you keep in your house at all. Always feed a varied diet. Even for fish, snakes, reptiles, anything. Always feed varied diet. They go on to recommend their own food brands, like a flake food or a pellet food and things like that. I think those are very good to feed to bettas and stuff as kind of a staple. But I do also think that feeding things like worms, live worms or frozen thawed. And when I say worms, I'm talking about like blood worms, black worms, those kinds of things, not like a earthworm or something like that. But the bloodworms or black worms, live or frozen thawed, bettas will love it. They don't need to eat it all the time. Like I said, keep like a fat lake or a pellet as your staple. Now they continue to go on and say in unfiltered containers, which we've already gone over, you shouldn't be using an unfiltered container. They say to feed once a day, which I think that can be okay. You just really need to watch your betta, make sure they're not getting overweight, because in reality, they don't need to eat every single day. They say in filtered aquariums to feed once or twice a day, which I think is too much. Personally, I've seen some bettas get overweight by feeding too much, or they just get swim bladder and stuff, because they can get that from overeating. And I really say maybe once a day, and even then I would still be watching my betta and like making sure it's not gaining too much weight or getting bloated or anything like that. Once every other day is a pretty good standard that I do for my bettas.
Yeah, I'm kind of on the same page on that one. People get really excited and want to feed their fish, and I think that's kind of where it comes from in these articles like that. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes these like large corporate ones kind of try to give people what they want and not necessarily what the truth is all the time. You know, this article is actually pretty good. It's actually pretty good.
Yeah, That was actually fairly surprising for us.
Yeah, I was quite surprised. This is much better than last week's. Last week's was not very good. And I'm sure we're going to see a whole lot of nonsense in some of these upcoming ones, too. And then this last little bit on here is interesting. I did not anticipate this to be part of this article at all, but it was about breeding. It was that they can be bred in captivity. I mean, yeah, obviously, we're not catching them out of the wild. But extra care is required to raise fry to adults. Yep, they don't go into more detail than that, which, in all honesty, I don't need to. But, yeah, and it says they can breed in just a few inches of water, which I don't really know why they put that in there. There's not really a reason to state that, but okay. And the male bettas will build bubble nests, and you'll see them do that. Like, if you just keep one male together, he'll just build a nest. And they attempt to lure a female to the nest, and then they do this little dance thing where he like wraps around her, and they induces her to release eggs that they pick up off the ground and then put into the bubble nest, and the male cares for the eggs until they hatch. Yeah, I mean, that's a very, very basic but accurate just understanding of how they breed. I've never bred them personally. I know a bit about it, done some research, but it's basically that. Then some little details, like they'll develop breeding bars, so their coloration will change, and they'll be like, hey, it's time to breed. They'll do that, and then it doesn't really say anything about time or how to raise the fry. It does say that extra care is needed, but they don't really go into the extra care. But again, just a normal care guide, I don't think you really need to go into that. Like, you don't need to. That's just a little interesting fun fact more than anything. But it is kind of cool.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing that I would add to the breeding thing, well, a couple of things I would add. First off, they say that it is intermediate. I would kind of agree. I would say maybe even more, a little more difficult, just because there is the risk of the male killing the female. And the other thing that they don't mention, but is 100% the truth, when breeding bettas, it's not a, oh, they've lived together forever and they finally decided to breed. No, it's a whole process. You have to set up a female next to a male, have a divider for a while, and then whenever you're wanting to possibly breed them, you'll pull that divider out between the two tanks. Not like so they can swim into each other, but like the visual divider so that they can see each other through the tank glass. Then you kind of see how they're reacting. If the male's like going crazy, wanting to fight it, like flaring up, maybe not. Same for the female. If she's just like, nope, not going over there, maybe don't breed at that time. If they're just acting kind of cordial and things like that, looking like they're wanting to mate, you then scoop the female out of her tank, put her in the male tank, and then you'd have to pay very close attention to them, because again, it can switch at a drop of a hat and they can start fighting, which then you would want to separate them, put the female back in her tank, keep the male in his tank, but that you would watch it once they've bred and like move their eggs up into the bubble nest, remove the female. She does not need to be in that tank because he will guard that nest from everything, including her. So even though they might have been cordial and bred and everything like that and have raised these babies, he's not going to be raising them with her. He will kill her as a threat towards his bubble nest. So
yeah, that's remember, they're not humans. They don't have the same emotions. They don't have the same emotions that we do. So they have, like, for him, he goes into ultra defense mode. Any living thing is a threat, right? He has to protect those babies. And what she would do in the wild is say, all right, man, good luck with all those babies, and just swim away and probably yes. Never see him again and not care. She doesn't have that same emotions that we do. And no. He's the same way. He doesn't necessarily care about her as a fish, right? He doesn't care. He doesn't care what she goes and does tomorrow. He's like, whatever, you can leave now. I've got all the eggs. And so for him, he sees her now as a threat. He's like, why are you sticking around? What are you trying to do? You trying to eat my eggs? That's a problem. We can't have that around here. So it is different, like. But again, you know, this little character, not a lot better than I thought it was going to be. Main things to disagree with is size of tanks. Say go bigger. That's really the biggest thing. And then they say you don't necessarily need a filter, which I'm very surprised, because this brand that publishes articles, like, main thing is filters. So, surprised they even mentioned that. But, yeah, other than that, like, it's pretty good. I think some of that came from a bit of cultural shift, too. Like, there's kind of a thing about betta fish and being kept better in recent years. So I bet some of these companies' old articles were atrocious. I remember reading they have them in a quarter gallon. It's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, things are definitely a lot better for these guys. Still very misunderstood, and a lot of that comes from just how they're kept in stores. People see how they're kept in stores and think that's acceptable, and it just isn't. That's very temporary housing, and even that, it's inadequate. But you know, it's changing. More and more stores are keeping them better and better, which is the goal. And that's kind of the goal of this series, too, is like debunking some stuff, getting good information out there, and being able to share it. And still, like, a bit of criticism. Like, obviously, we're not shouting out these companies or anything or putting them on blast, but it is putting a little attention on there, being like, hey, just so you know, this is not good information.
Yeah. It also kind of shows you, as like for any animal really, before you get the animal to do your research, because the first care sheet may not be a good one. Just because it's the first one you find on Google doesn't mean it's good. So really you gotta do research, look at multiple sources, and a lot of times you learn from experience. But also listening to people who are experienced with keeping these animals, all that kind of stuff. It's just, it really proves the point of do your research, research before you get any living animal.
Yeah, I say read 10 articles and then combine all that information and form your own like care sheet in your head. That's what I've been doing recently. Been looking into a couple different species of snakes and their care. And I have never kept these, but I know I disagree with some of the things in some of these care sheets, just because it contradicts, you know. I read 4 that say that they need, that UV light is beneficial, and then I read 1 that says it isn't, and then I look, and that article is a little older, and potentially a little outdated, and it's like, okay, I think if I get this species, I'm going to use UV light. And that doesn't mean that other care sheet was necessarily bad. It just means, you know, a little outdated. Maybe not all of the information is 100% accurate. And same thing even on here, you know, we're not 100% accurate. And we have our own opinions. And like I was saying on the temperature, I very well could get into a discussion with somebody about the temperature that they said on here and be persuaded their way and be like, you know, I think you should keep them hotter.
Yeah, it all is, again, just do your research, read a bunch of articles, listen to episodes like this, watch YouTube videos, all that kind of stuff. Just do your research before you look at getting into any animal. But to wrap things up, so basically, this article that we looked at, we were pleasantly surprised that it was actually pretty decent. Again, the only things we kind of disagreed with was slightly lower temperature, larger enclosures, and then things like just feed them maybe once every other day versus the article saying once or twice a day. And then other things like more details on the breeding and stuff like that. So that basically wraps up what we were wanting to get into for this.
Yeah, I mean, I agree too. Like, I wouldn't change a whole lot about this article. And when I saw what it was, when I first Googled it and found the link, I thought it was going to be really bad. And turns out it's actually pretty good. And I think it says a lot about the culture and everything. But Before I should start rambling on, we'll get a wrap on things. So, yeah, end of the day, bigger is better on tanks, as always. You know, this is going to be a recurring theme in this series. I think we're going to constantly be saying get a bigger tank. But, yes, that was BioBros episode 4 on all streaming platforms. Remember, like, subscribe, share, comment, save, favorite, do whatever all the good buttons are. And we'll see you guys on the next one. If there's a species that you think is very misunderstood, let us know about it. And we will do an episode on it. Always looking for suggestions and stuff on that kind of thing. Join the Discord, send it in there. DM us on Instagram. Those are going to be the best places to get our attention.
Yeah, you said it best. Basically, if you want to give us episode ideas, Discord's the best place. You can also DM us on Instagram and things like that. But follow us, give us likes, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube. Join the Discord. We want to grow this community and continue to support and give the episodes and things like that out to the people that really want to listen to them and learn about this kind of stuff. But I hope everyone's having a good day, morning, night, whenever you're listening to this, and we will see y'all next week.